Silent House is the latest novel from Nobel laureate Orhan Pamuk, but it's not actually new. Although he wrote it 30 years ago, it's only recently been translated into English. The reviews have been glowing. It's already been named a New York Times Notable Book of the Year for 2012. It's published by Knopf. And Mr. Pamuk has another new book out as well, The Innocence of Objects, a catalog for the Museum of Innocence, which he created in Istanbul based on his novel of the same name. That book is from Abrams, and I'm very pleased that both of them have brought Orhan Pamuk back to our show. Good to see you again.
Good morning.
Silent House was published in Turkey in 1983. I'd assumed that all of your work had been translated even before you won the Nobel Prize for Literature. But doesn't a Nobel Prize spur publishers to get all of a prize winner's works into English?
All of my friends are asking that. Why don't you publish this before? And there's also another 600-page novel, which I'll probably publish soon.
My first one.
This is my second novel.
Sevded Bey.
Yes. This is my second novel. My answer and my is that I was writing. I'm writing continuously. That every time my both American and international publishers ask for a new book, I always recommend the one that I'm writing. Since also translation takes so much time, once a new book is published, the other book is already published in Turkey, so I push that. But while in the last 2 years I was busy with the Museum of Innocence, the actual museum, the novel I wrote, but the museum I gave, the dead artist in me got out in the last 2 years.
Because you started originally, you thought you'd be an artist, not a writer.
Yes, as I wrote in my autobiographical Istanbul, between the ages of 7 and 22, I wanted to be a painter, then suddenly switched to writing novels. Then the fact that actually I felt more happy when I paint stayed with me. In fact, I wrote My Name is Red just to address the pleasures of painting, where the hand moves faster than the mind, the intellect, and the mind wants to understand what's he doing, what's it doing there.
It's called hand-eye coordination.
Yes.
It always feels like a miracle while you're engaged in it.
And in fact, it's more spontaneous, and it makes me happier. I have also realized that I am a happier person when I paint, but I get more deeply engaged, more in a more cerebral way, engaged in a serious way when I write. In the end, I am a novelist.
Well, they take care of different things.
Yes.
I mean, you can't tell this kind of story as a painter. I guess you could as a graphic novelist, but that's something different. Silent House was translated by Robert Finn. And since you're quite fluent in English, did you have a hand in the translation?
Yes. No, not a hand, but going over, just deleting out this or that, and also adding both to Turkish original and to this English translation some little details that highlight and make the reader understand what was happening. What was happening was the events take place in just before the military coup in 1980, that there is a family gathering. There is an old grandmother who remembers the past, and there is this frustrated, angry new generation. This, in the end, Silent House is a generation novel, say like those of Turgenev or Dostoevsky, where the first generation imports some ideas from West, that of secularization, modernity, but the second and third generations are not happy with it. So it's a generational novel about the state of things in Turkey in around 1980.
And each chapter is narrated by a different character, which allows you to show what was going on through these different perspectives, from left to right politically, from very strongly Turkish to somebody who wants to leave, desperately wants to leave.
I like identifying with my characters. That's why I use multiple points of view. And I think that at the heart of the novel lies our capacity to identify with people who are not like us. In Snow, I identified with a right-wing fundamentalist, Islamic fundamentalist. Here we have a young high school dropout, nationalist, angry nationalists walking in the streets.
And he's part of a gang of nationalist thugs.
Mm-hmm. The description, his voice is based on the texts of interrogation of right-wing nationalists who were rounded up after the 1980 military coup, and their confessions inspired the voice or the details of the book.
What about the other characters? Are they based to some degree on people who you might have grown up with?
Because
you grew up in this class.
Yes, there is the first generation, of course, with all modernization and radical secularism dreams, which are, of course, in an Islamic country, very hard to implement in a democratic way. The political demands of the fancy westernization of upper classes and the reality of the lower classes who embrace their religion.
Well, Turkey is an odd country in that, on the one hand, it has this very long history that goes back before the Ottoman Empire. And on the other hand, it's a new country. And that's part of what you're writing about here, a country that was new after World War I. Kemal Atatürk sets his stamp on it, but he's long dead by the time this happens.
The ruling elite of Ottoman Empire, which was falling apart, felt sad when they tidied up, invented a new nation, Turkish Republic, which was in many ways continuation, especially upper classes and ruling elite goals of the Ottoman Empire. But when it comes to my generation or two generations later, the grand idea of Ottoman Empire vanished. I spent my childhood among the ruins, wooden houses or stone houses of Ottoman Empire. All the pasha's buildings were high schools or government buildings. And as Ottoman Empire fell apart, the ruling elite of both Turkish Republic and of course, Kemal Atatürk, founder of Turkish Republic, imposed a high standard of secularism to which the nation or the conservative nation and people reacted. The whole Turkish politics and culture is based on this dialogue or resistance to modernity and imposition of modernity by upper classes.
So you have Fatma, the widow in her 90s, who lives in this small seaside town with her servant, Recep. He's a dwarf who also is her late husband's illegitimate son. But she connects to the earlier history. And then we have three grandchildren here.
Also, she is based on both my paternal and maternal grandmothers. My maternal grandmother was married to a lawyer who went to study to Europe and sent her back in at the beginning of 20th century letters saying that, oh, there is democracy here. Oh, there is feminism here. What do you think? To which she reacted in a very reactionary way. And once my aunt told me all these little letters and stories, I thought that it would serve the book very well.
The three grandchildren are orphans. So, to some degree, there's a generational skip here.
I just wanted to dramatize the foundation of the secular foundations of modern Turkish Republic, and three generations later, how it's operating through these characters. One of them is a right-wing thug. The other one is aspiring to go to the United States because he's not happy. Turkey is poor. The sense of frustration.
And the third one is an idealistic leftist.
And there is a sense of frustration in the novel. After I saw this after I read it again just to check the translation. And now the only thing that dramatically changed is that the country is affluent now and the sense of frustration doesn't exist anymore. And, of course, Istanbul when I wrote this book, Istanbul was probably around 4 million. Now it's, they say, 13 million. And this small fisherman's village and a fancy now summer resort place is now part of Istanbul. It's not outside of Istanbul anymore.
The Financial Times review recommended you read this novel and your recent novel, The Museum of Innocence, in tandem because they saw them as being related in some ways. Do you?
It, They are related in the fact that I like identifying with the characters and put a create an almost anarchic, chaotic atmosphere, and then carefully try to manipulate the story.
My guess is Orhan Pamuk, who has just published two books. One, Silent House, was written 30 years ago, and then the other one, called The Innocence of Objects, has just been released as an art book by Abrams. And that is a totally different kind of book, which we'll get to in a moment. So you revisited it after 30 years. There always are those problems when you see what you wrote when you were a lot younger. Were you relatively happy with what
I was
you
happy, in fact. The irony of the book is that Turkey or Turkish culture and literature was so political when I published this that no one thought that this is a political book. I also agreed with my friends that while they were writing highly idealist political books, I just wrote a little family story I told. 30 years later, when I read this and I'm talking to my editors, everyone was saying this is politic. That was a shock to see that a book that I thought was not political now is political. One reason for it, though, is this: the central character would be high school dropout and would be murderer Hasan is only was. Among the many, one character among the six characters and was not that important. But the events, 9/11, the rise of political Islam, these things and his anti-Western sentiments was a minor thing then. Now we notice more of the details of that anti-Western sentiment because it politically grew and grew and grew all over the world.
So do you think this novel is being received differently now than it might have when you first
definitely,
wrote it?
Definitely so. Even in Turkey, that it's being received differently.
It's being reissued?
Of course. It's now also in Turkey, it's being revisited as a more political novel. Internationally, the book was published 25 years ago in France. The reception was different. It was the picture of Turkey. Today, I also agree that it was, in a way, identifying the rise of anti-Westernism, the angry man in the third world who is upset about being outside of history and wants to impose his resentment. These are the things in the book.
But Turkey, just geographically, has a problem along those lines because it's both east and west, and it seems to want to identify with both all at the same time, which leads to some serious problems. You can't resolve some of those things.
Thank God that at least you can resolve things in a novel, but identify with both points of view and compose a whole. That was my whole life, in fact, that identifying with the radical secularist westernizers and trying to identify with right-wing people who are resisting to it.
And there's a problem right now, isn't there? Because the country is pulling toward a more Islamist view of things, but at the same time there is resistance. There's often talk about the possibility that the military might very well pull off another coup if they feel that the government is going too far.
I don't think military will pull off another coup because they are now, by the maneuvers of the ruling party, they are sided. A lot of soldiers are in jail. I don't think there is a danger of military coup. But on the other hand, the country, especially in addressing the rights of the Kurds, is still in trouble.
And what about, well, it's not just the Kurds, because there are a number of other areas of tension right near, Syria, for example. And then Turkey is a member of NATO, isn't it?
Yes, Turkey is asking.
And still is knocking on the door of the EU, or has that been put in?
Since EU is troubled by its own Eurozone problems, Turkey's entry to Europe, we were all happy about it some 6 years ago, but the idea faded away perhaps because both Turkey's nationalists and European Union's nationalists resisted it. And since the weather is not very sunny in Eurozone or European Union, this is not a big or interesting idea, unfortunately, now.
And Germany has its own issues with so many Turkish immigrants. It's very ambivalent about their place in German society. And Germany is the dominant country in the EU.
Yes. Germany is not, unfortunately, still yet to embrace the idea of taking Turks or Turkey to European Union.
Let's talk about the other new book of yours that's just been published, The Innocence of Objects. It's a catalog for the Museum of Innocence, which you created in Istanbul. And I remember when you were here 3 years ago to talk about the novel, which was called The Museum of Innocence, you said that you were planning to create this actual museum.
And I did it.
Mm-hmm. And you were thinking of doing the two things simultaneously? You were writing the book with the idea of creating this museum?
I conceived the museum and the novel, The Museum of Innocence, together. The idea was to write a story and collect the things that represent the story and then open a museum and tell the whole collection and the making of the museum in the novel. More or less, I did that.
Did you see the museum as a kind of art installation?
It is. It's probably a conceptual art installation, and the biggest, and also it's in a way I'm exhibiting an imaginary collection made up of real objects, the first biggest object being the building itself.
But you also had to spend a fair amount of money to get these objects together.
Yes.
Out of your own pocket?
Yes. I did the museum with my royalties, really. But buying the objects were not that expensive. They were daily life objects that I found in the streets of Istanbul, in flea markets, or from relatives. This is not a museum of expensive paintings. This is a museum of objects people of Istanbul used between 1960s to end of 20th century.
Well, how did you find the building it's housed in, which was built in 1890? Was it important?
There are so many buildings like
that's
that.
In?
And there are so many old buildings in Istanbul. I began to research for a building. I already had the idea in mid-1990s, so I found the building in 1998 and immediately bought it. It was in a rundown, very cheap neighborhood. And at that time, I couldn't afford more. And I needed the neighborhood of the building because then, since an imaginary story is going to take place there, I begin to imagine the story after I bought the book, after I bought the building.
The objects are arranged in boxes, which have been compared to Joseph Cornell's work. Is he an influence?
He is an influence, and Joseph Cornell is loved by so many writers, poets, but there is also in the...
Because he's a visual storyteller, but not one who's a literal visual storyteller.
I cannot explain that. In fact, I don't want to explain that, but there are also there is also an influence of cabinets of curiosities. The logic of the museum is such that each vitrine, cabinet, or box corresponds to one chapter of the book. And as I was writing the novel, I was collecting these objects and, in fact, trying to maneuver my story in such a way that the objects in the cabinet will be interesting to make compositions.
If I come to Istanbul, can I just go to the museum?
No, you just send me an email and I'll take you around, of course.
But do people visit it as
a
regular museum?
Yes, it's open. It's a regular museum, and the number of people who are coming are really making us happy.
Most of them read the novel first?
Very interesting statistics. Only one-third are coming. Only one-third of our visitors are people who read the novel. Most of them had heard the project, both the novel and the museum, and find it interesting and come and see. And from through the visitor's eyes, I have also realized that even if you haven't read the novel, if you come, you have a sense of the story, that the epic qualities, these objects convey a sort of an epic picture of the whole culture and the and Istanbul at the time. And we hope that you feel the sadness of the story and the epic dimensions of a novel that represents Istanbul between mid-70s to end of 20th century.
Don't you live in the same house that you grew up in?
Now,
do houses like that serve as museums of another sort? Because yes. You have grandma's
plates. I have always lived in cluttery houses full of old objects and never understood why. When I came to New York, I saw that this is because of perhaps tax issues. Not many people do that. And I used to paint in 1970s in my mother's cluttery house. Or I have seen also in friends' fathers or houses that flats being used almost as warehouses, or and they remind me of museums. I like that to compose cluttered objects in. I like to exhibit objects in to represent a milieu, culture that, or perhaps to put simply, the life I have lived.
And you actually make the argument in this book, in a chapter called The Modest Manifesto for Museums. The two books we're talking about, one, The Innocence of Objects from Abrams, and Silent House, just published in translation by Knopf. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.